Mini golf is my favorite sport. I like the way they putt up and down the course. We're talking basket or mini golf balls with a special guest from overseas once again on the podcast. Yeah, I'm Tom, and I'm happy to have you call me Mr. T. I've been out practicing a little bit with some European-style mini golf balls that I've been acquiring over time. It's been really fun playing some courses that I know pretty well in a very new way. I am absolutely a novice with my mini golf balls at best, but excited to have a pro on our episode offer some mini golf ball history in this episode. You can find all of the mini golf designs and yes, reviews, finally getting some up, and more from myself and the Pink Putter at acoupleputts.com and on social media at coupleputts. If you're looking for course and hole design work, we're always putting up new stuff in our portfolio over at minigolfdesigners.com, and we have some merch at minigolfgoods.com that if you order now, you'll have it just in time for Mini Golf Day on May 11th.
And I'm Pat, the co-founder of the mini golf website and social media conglomerate, The Putting Penguin. I too am feeling very European these days, given almost all of my putting for about the past 6 or 7 weeks has been using mini golf balls as I help some of our friends prepare for their first foray into that world. And our guest is also responsible for us having a Putting Penguin European style mini golf ball. So a lot of ties to our guest today. And you can find everything that we've been doing for all of our tournament prep and all of our other Penguin mini golf antics by looking for a Putting Penguin on most of the major social media outlets or visiting our website at theputtingpenguin.com. And while you're out there scrolling, don't forget to follow the Puttcast mini accounts. And finally, since you're clearly in love with our podcast, make sure you're liking, subscribing, and giving us a great review wherever you choose to listen to podcasts.
You know it well, but this is the official podcast of the AMA, the American Mini Golf Alliance. As you probably already know, we're very involved in the organization and we helped found it several years ago. And we're just helping try to grow the game of mini golf in all of its many forms across the US. If you love mini golf, which you probably do because you're listening to this podcast, and you want to join up with the AMA for some fun or even just renew your membership if you haven't done that this year already, you can do all of that for free at amaminigolf.com. Go to the right-hand corner, click Become a Member, and you can renew or become a member for free. Our membership is free through this year, thanks to a number of sponsors, including our friends at Walkabout Mini Golf VR. As you know, we've already hosted an event this year on Walkabout, and we just added our second event onto the schedule for after our in-person events in November. So take a look at our events calendar for all of the upcoming events, and we'll talk about a few of them in a bit, but we are going to jump into a little bit of recent news because we had a single AMA event happen recently since our last podcast that we were talking earlier and trying to remember when we last recorded. I think it was early March after the first Survivor Series event for the World Putting League.
Yes, which we'll get to World Putting League. We talked about them. So it's been a little bit.
And I guess I should cover the putt 18 since I think I scored and watched all 23 people who had participated in the event. And
well, you certainly did better than I did. So
and much like our event last November, on the last day of play, we had the winner. In the fall, it was our friend Gary Schiff who set what was then the record on putt 18 on the last day. This time we had Kyle Corsi take down David Gom, who had won our first putt 18 event for the AMA last year in January. David Gom had shot the low round of the tournament leading up to the last day, he had shot a 60, and overall he had shot, I think it was around minus 22. So he was four strokes ahead of me. I went right after Dave Gom, didn't really see his score, and shot a minus 18. So I knew I was in second. And as it would happen once again on the final day, that bumps me to third because Kyle Corsi comes out, shoots a minus 10 and steady the whole time, doesn't really drop too many shots and has all of his rounds under par. And it really kind of came down almost. I mean, he won by three strokes over David Gom, and you can take a look at the event on our website to see all of the final scores. But one of the big results on David Gom's round that really shifted it was he took a line ball on one of the holes, because you get one every round, and he turned what could have been a single bogey into a triple bogey, and that could have been the difference. But Kyle, just calm, cool, collected. He's been playing really well all year in person, you know, in the last year, and on putt 18 and on walkabout for that matter. So yeah, he knew what the score he had to hit was, and he just did it.
We got to come up with a nickname or something for him, because he has done this multiple times, sweeping in at the end. I mean, he beat me for second and Dolphin last year the same way. He snuck into a couple other tournaments the same way. I don't know if it's the closer. We got to find something for Kyle. And, you know, if anybody's been listening to the podcast for a while, we had Kyle on back in the fall talking Masters and everything. So very excited to see not only him do well, but to have some, you know, relatively new blood with him in the AMA and the local Northeast tournament. So it's been great.
Yeah. And I mean, for myself, I was stoked, even though it was a bummer to get bumped down to third. I got extra points and had my second podium in a row in a putt 18 event with a really strong field. I knew that I had done one stroke better than Jared Mutter, which alone was a feat. He's really good, and he didn't play as well as he would have liked. And then Gary Schiff, I think, just with the beginning of the baseball season, because he's so involved with Major League Baseball, wasn't as dialed in as usual. And Justin Seymour just had a few bad results, and coming in third with the talented putters that show up in our putt 18 events, and especially having this really great turnout, is a big deal. And one of like the really awesome, amazing early results in the tournament was that we had Tim, who runs Access Mini Golf from Wisconsin, who had not played a putt 18 to date event to date, and not having a time limit and being able to play this at home in his wheelchair, he stepped out in his first round and he shot a minus six and overall shot a par, which put him in the top half of the field. And super impressive debut for him on putt 18. And same with Mike Pendleton from Minnesota that plays in our local tournaments. He made the top half of the cut, borrowing a mat from me that I had as a backup. And I was just like, sure, you and Owen can play on it. And they both did well. So it's fun to see more people engaging in the game. And then, you know, Dave Gom again, having a UK player where it opens up the possibility for international play. That's the part about our virtual events I really like. I kind of went on a little bit of a long intro to my rounds when I played, just talking about why we do these virtual events. And that's exactly it. I think I've talked about it on the podcast, but just giving more people more opportunities to participate in ways that, you know, we can't necessarily provide in all of our in-person tournaments is really, really nice. So I was stoked about that. Since the last episode, we had Putt 18 confirm their sponsorship for the AMA for 2024, and we appreciate their sponsorship of the season. You can see that we now in our event schedule have a fall virtual event on Putt 18 already on the docket for October 27th through November 2nd. And you can get a Putt 18 mat now, and you can use that to jump in one of the upcoming seasons of Putt 18. We're currently in season 14. I'm up in Division 1, and I already feel like I am a million strokes behind because Matt Ansley of New Zealand, who has won 8 of the 13 titles in putt 18, it feels like he's won all of them. He tied his 4-round world record of a 4-round score of minus 57, a 231 in the first week, while also beating his own world record of 54 with a 53. I think it was his second round out the gate. His bad round was a 62, and he shot 2 rounds under 60. So I would like to preemptively congratulate Matt Ansley for winning Series 14, Division 1. But here's the cool thing. If you're someone who's like, well, that doesn't sound fun to like join a league where I'm just going to get completely trounced, there are multiple divisions within Putt 18. I should know that because I have 2 trophies from winning in Division 2 where I was able to win a little bit of dough, get a little bit of hardware, or they call it silverware in the UK. And you get all sorts of like fun little things and opportunities to win money and have different knockout competitions and have a team event that they kind of like chop and divide up people from all the divisions and what have you. And so I'm playing on Team Triathlon with Tim from Access Mini Golf and James McCarthy from New Zealand. So even if I'm playing bad myself, I'm teamed up with other people and there's another race within it and prizes involved with it. So I would encourage people to check out the Putt 18 World Pro League. There's going to be season 15 starting June 2nd going through July 6th. And there'll be a season 16 that will be August 11th through September 14th. And if you go to the Putt 18 website at putt18.com.au and you use the code MINIGOLF, just one word, -10, you can get 10% off one of the mats on us. If you're looking for that code, we have that included in the upcoming virtual event in the events page on the AMA website that you can pull that down and get yourself a mat. The price does include shipping from Australia, which is pretty good. So yeah, join us on Putt 18. A bunch of us got started on it in the pandemic. It's fun. It's accessible. And you learn a lot about how many breaks you have in the floor in your house.
And while we won't give any bonus points for this because our tournament is running over Halloween, I would love to see some people play in costume during our second tournament.
That would be amazing. I would absolutely love that. But yeah, that's Putt 18. Thanks to Glenn and Putt 18 for having that game available, especially during the pandemic and continuing to do it, and for all the people running it. And you'll hear more about it as we go on. But to some other AMA news, we had talked about this previously, but didn't want to spoil any announcements. We were given the thumbs up, but all 3 of the Southern Swing tour dates that are going to be part of the AMA 2024 season have been announced. And so there's going to be an event in July, August, and September. It's all leading up to the Masters, the idea to get people engaged in it. For all of the tournaments, they are asking for people to be a USPMGA member, and you'll find out why, because their USPMGA is going to throw in a little bit of extra if you win the Southern Swing Tour. I'm not sure what the scoring rubric is, but I'm sure it's like a mix of points based on your placing in each of them combined. But they are going to have an extra $500 prize for the winner of that, as well as free entry to the Masters, which is about $180. So that's no small change. And on top of it, all 3 of the tournaments are going to have $2,500 purse at each, and they're going to have a pro and an amateur division at both of them. And they'll all 3 have 5 rounds for the pros. And I believe they're going to do 3 for amateur, but it might be 2. I'll have to double check. But the first one's going to be July 13th. It's going to be the Putters League Summer Classic, and it will be a blue tournament, and that'll be in Roswell, Georgia. On August 24th, we'll have the Mossy Creek Tennessee Pro Mini Golf Open. That is also a World Adventure Golf Tour qualifier. And the day afterwards, on the 25th, is going to be the Mossy Creek Match Play Masters 2, and that's in Jefferson City, Tennessee. And then the third event is going to be on September 7th at Lakeview Putt and Play in Arden, North Carolina. It's going to be the North Carolina Open. That's going to be the third event of the Southern Swing. They're all going to be AMA scoring events. The Tennessee Open is going to be blue as well. And the Lakeview Putt and Play event, the North Carolina Open, that's going to be white. So you have blue and white there. And then both Mossy Creek and the Putters League are going to be hosting red events. So there will be multiple blue and multiple red events and a white event that you can get in all three tiers in that southern little corridor there, which was very intentional for us. We really wanted there to be these different pockets in the United States where you don't have to fly. You can just get in your car and you can play in all three tiers in the south and the northeast and the upper Midwest. Hopefully down the road we can get to other parts, but that'll make a big difference in the top 10 at the end of the year. I think we'll definitely see some people who play all three of those tournaments, folks like Brian Akers, Gary Hester. I don't know if Rainey Statham will be playing those, but I would expect someone like Randy Reeves, who we'll be talking about in a little bit, or Greg Newport would be, or Joey Graybeal especially, be playing in all of them. All of those names are going to start popping up in the top 10, I think, this year. And that's exciting for us because, as we know, they are top class putters.
Yeah, and then having that Tennessee Open as the WAG Tour qualifier down south too, yep, you've got multiple opportunities there. I mean, so you're triple dipping between AMA, WAG Tour, USPMGA. I'm hoping, we'll see if I get down there to actually play that one, but that's the one I'm targeting this year. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how some of that math works, especially with two blue, because you can really rack up some bonus points if you do well in two blue events this year.
Yeah, no, you definitely can. And the nice thing I mentioned about the Mossy Creek Tennessee Open is that the day after, they have their Match Play Masters as well. So if you're down there, there's more to it. Getting to Jefferson City, Tennessee is not necessarily easy, but having those added incentives and all of that going on is cool. And then there's a whole great group of folks involved with Mossy Creek due to Kyle Cutshaw, who's the course owner and really developed a member community there that's super, super cool. A bunch of them traveled last year to the Putters League event and got to know them, and a bunch of them are AMA members. So excited that they're going to be hosting an event that's going to have a lot at stake on top of being part of the Southern Swing. So that's what we've got for the Southern Swing. We probably have at least one or two more events that might get announced before the end of the year that are just being finalized, but they'll both be red. And frankly, if there's one other one that could possibly announce, they're going to be red. So our major tournaments are going to be announced. We'll have those events on our event page, and there'll be more coming out from Southern Swing Tour on a website just with details on all the tournaments. Yeah, but we've got kind of a quiet month here in April. We've got literally nothing going on for in-person, virtual, or any tournaments. So it's a quiet one, but Pat, what do we got coming up afterwards?
So we've got a jammed-packed May because we start the first weekend with the Lighthouse Classic, and that's going to be in New Jersey. Our friend Biggie's going to be helping run that one, along with the O Street guys are going to be there. That's going to be at Jens Links, which is up at Barnegat Light. I think you've played that one, right, Tom, at the time?
I have a review that I finished that I'm saving to put up.
Oh, perfect. Soon. Yeah, I like that one. Nice location at the end there.
Harris course.
Kind of, you know what you're going to get into. It's going to be on the High Tide course. We've got three rounds there. Excited to have that there. That seemed like some good owners. I know Biggie's really excited to have that. And we'll see how the
May 4th.
I know it works so well for him being such a good Star Wars. So I expect, you know, who knows? There's nothing. He hasn't told us anything going to be super Star Warsy, but I'll bet you something's going to come through. It. Maybe some fun awards or things like that. But then, you know, the next weekend, one that we're obviously very excited about, both of us, because you get to run it and I get to go play in it. It's the Looniest.
the looniest mini golf open over at Island Lake Golf. They have a mini golf course called the Loon's Nest. And they were open for a little bit a couple weeks ago, and then we got dumped with snow and cold weather. But yeah, it'll be three rounds there. And we had a little bit of a change from last year where we are going to have the amateur division will only be playing two stroke play rounds and an aces only round. And the pros will be doing three stroke play rounds and an aces only. And the aces only is going to be after the second round. And the idea with that is while everybody's out playing the aces only round, I can tally up the scores, make sure everything's set for the final round, and just really keep things moving along. So yeah, that one should be really fun. And then yeah, our upcoming events after that are two that Mick Cullen will be running in June. We have June 2nd, the inaugural Rosebud Open that will be at America's Action Territory in Kenosha, Wisconsin. It'll be on the, I think it's called the Wisconsin Adventure Course.
Yes, Wisconsin like, Adventure.
That's what I thought. Which I tied the MC Mini Masters record on. There's a hole with cheese on it, and it's a fun course. They redid the turf recently, so it's playing pretty well. And they're going to do three rounds there. And then Mick's annual, I think it's the 27th MC Mini Masters. It's Saturday, June 29th. And as of right now, for the event page, and what he said is they're going to do the same rotation as last year. So we'll start out of America's Action Territory on the same two courses there, then go to Congo River Exploration Area, and finish at Park Kink. So it'll only be three locations, but it's going to be six rounds no matter what. It's possible that he goes to a different location if he's not getting a good deal from the courses for the whole group or whatever, but we expect it'll be at those. They're really good courses, really fun, and yeah, that'll be us through June, and then yeah, the July events will have the Shack move their event up there, and then we'll have that Putters League Championship in Georgia. So that gets us all the way through July.
Yeah, and there is some other stuff going on in May. There is the USPMGA US Open that's going to be in Kansas City. Yeah. So that's the weekend after the Looniest. And so you've got that and then kind of Memorial Day, which that's a good break for us between all of our events, between Looniest and then
and
Rosebud.
Then the South Carolina Open is the 20th, I think.
Oh, maybe. I don't know
I think
that
the
one
South Carolina
off the top of my head.
Open that they're holding at Pineapple, because I've been asked by a couple of people about that one. It's a new annual event that the USPMGA has been doing at the Pineapple course.
I believe yes, it's April 20th.
Five rounds so, on April 20th.
So April 20th.
April 420.
Yeah.
We'll have all the THC edibles, and people are going to be something with Pineapple. Pineapple Express. The Pineapple Express tournament. I don't know. There's going to be a $5,000 purse. So
yeah,
that's not bad.
Not too shabby. And then the, I guess really the big event that we're paying attention to in April is the WMF's WAG Tour final. And so, you know, obviously it's a big event for us just because we're connected to the WAG Tour with our events. It's the first time they're running over there in Brno in the Czech Republic. But as we've talked about before, we've got our two guys going from Matterhorn, Dave Veda, who won the tournament, and Caleb Smith, who came in third. Unfortunately, Justin Seymour, our second place winner, couldn't make it this year, but still great to have two folks going over there. I've been working with them, like I said, for the past few weeks, just trying to get them acclimated to using the mini golf balls. They're really excited. We've got plenty of AMA gear for them that just showed up, and they look very sharp in. So when we find out the exact links for the live streaming and everything, we'll certainly be sharing that out across all of our different social media, because it'll be great to see not only those guys, but a lot of our friends in the international community are going to be playing in that tournament. And it'll be an interesting precursor for one of the courses that's being played at the Wagam in June. So another thing that we'll be kind of watching closely, but just also with the live streaming and the scoring, we're going to try to do some of that stuff both in Tennessee and at Matterhorn this year. So really a lot of great advancements, and we'll be pushing that, and just, you know, we'll have those guys on probably at this point after they come in. We've been lucky and been getting some local television stuff here, which has been really cool for the game, and excited to run it back next year, because we've got kind of a template now, you know, for at least the people who win Matterhorn and Mossy Creek. We know they're in automatically, so we know how we can support them and get them ready and put them up against the world's best. I'm very excited to see how this is going to go.
Yeah, it's been nice seeing their photos and your photos of them practicing together on a weekly basis. That's kind of what you got to be able to do to hold your own. And I think Caleb's the youngest player that's going to be competing in it.
Probably, because he's not quite 18 yet.
And I don't think there is anybody else. So I think that's really nice to see, that not only does the AMA send over two players, but we're actually sending over a future generation of potential mini golf players, that in a game that we all are interested in growing, I think we're always keen to see new areas of growth, whether it's more women playing or more young people playing the game. So I think that's a positive for that. And yeah, hopefully we can get him on the pod sooner than later. If we can't get him before the WAG Tour final, I think afterwards will be great, because I know they'll be headed over there in not too long, because they're going to give themselves a good solid week to practice, which I'll be doing a little bit even more than that in those two courses at Brno. So it'll be interesting.
So the other thing we want to talk about is swing back to the World Putting League event, which we mentioned a little bit earlier on in the episode, because we covered the first of the Survivor Series in our last episode. And so there was the second, I guess you can call it semifinal or qualifying match, I guess is the way they phrased it, for the final that happened. And then we'll cover the finals. But the second event was held on March 4th. And I guess at this time, we weren't super surprised that Mr. Newport finally came through in a WPL event here, although it was an amazing match. He snuck by John Powell in the sudden death to win ace on hole number 5. John made it, and Randy made it, and that was the interesting part of it with those two qualifiers. We talked about, like, the winners were automatically going to be qualified, but then it was the best two scores from the entire group after that. And as the way it worked out, that second set of qualifiers had those best scores. So you had, you know, Tim, who got in from the win on the first episode, but then the next three, Greg winning and having the automatic, but then John and Randy having the scores filled out that four for the final. So interesting way of doing it there. It reminded me a little bit of kind of the City Golf Tour finals with the way they had run their flights and everything. So be interesting to see if we see some more of that type of stuff in the future, not only with WPL events, but with other events as well. But from a final perspective, it was originally supposed to be, well, I guess today, as we're recording, or tomorrow, I guess we're recording on April 1st. I think it was supposed to be April 2nd. They moved it up to March 18th, so the Monday right after St. Patrick's Day there. And the format again got changed around a little bit, because I think it was originally supposed to be straight bracket match play.
Head-to-head.
And then it was the four of them play, and then the top two move on to a final, and then, you know, winner take all at that part. And Greg came in super hot in his first round. I can't remember what his final score was, like 6 or 7 under. I mean, he was all over the place.
He was crushing.
I think
and it was like a foregone conclusion that he was in.
Oh, yeah. I mean, by the 12th hole, I think it was going to be hard for him to lose that. And Reeves ended up having the second highest score or second best score. And then it was a really good final. It was super tight. Nobody was really dropping shots. And it came down to Randy had an unbelievable slam dunk ace on hole 14, which it's a hard hole to describe on the Pineapple course. Well, let's put it this way. There's not a whole lot of aces that come off of it, because you're hitting a fairly long shot, and the rock that you're hitting is pretty shallow in terms of height, so it's doesn't give a consistent bounce. And honestly, if he didn't slam dunk it in, that ball was like halfway back to the tee box at that point. And and no fault to Greg. I don't think he had a bogey in that final round. No. And it just came down to that one.
In either of the rounds.
Yeah. And then they had to hold on through those last, you know, four or five holes there at Pineapple, which is no small feat to do either for either of them, because you can give up strokes there really fast at the end of the day. So, you know, congratulations to Randy Reeves for winning that event. And, you know, we're all waiting to kind of see what the next thing up is going to be, because it was good to have them back. I did like them. My productivity probably doesn't like them, but I enjoy having the WPL back and the looking at the odds and everything and being able to talk about some more broadcast competitive mini golf.
Yeah, and just being able to see competitive play on courses that we know well. Mm-hmm. I thought the first or the first event we talked about, which was event number two, where it had Rob from the Hammer on, he's played those courses and does a lot more, I would say, straight ahead play by play where he's talking about how hard it is near the hole. This last event, we had JT Tilley, who had been on one of the events at Aloha and one of the events down in Tennessee. And he's going for a little bit more of a Rob Riggle sort of tongue-in-cheek kind of jokey thing, like talking about people's shoes and talking about people's demeanors and counting people out a little earlier than he should. Like, I think he had counted Randy Reeves out like through at the third hole in the first set of holes and maybe the first event. It was... And then he won the whole thing. And so, yeah, it'd be interesting to see what the players felt about the feedback. It felt a little bit more aggressive towards the players, where it was highlighting things that I don't necessarily think that they would be as keen on. But it's something.
It was honestly very strange.
Yeah.
Because they have actually spent a good amount of time building up the sport side and the seriousness of it. And Rob, you know, from the Hammer has done a really good job. He has played an event, but has really brought, you know, we had Brian Katrick in the beginning episodes, and he has always brought good gravitas to it from his work and having played in the events as well. And I think Rob kind of slid into that role very well. And he still brings, I would say, a fair amount of, you know, good color commentary and interesting humor to it. But yeah, this second set was not, it didn't match the vibe of what was actually happening on the course, especially it being a final. And it just seemed very strange. And I don't know, I mean, who knows, maybe there was scheduling. So you never know with the tournament having moved around. Yeah. And obviously that now it's during like March Madness. And so who knows if Rob, like it just could have been a one-off. But yeah, if you're taking feedback and, you know, as much as we do love everything in WPL, just didn't work for us. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. There was some audio stuff that was weird too. Cause like JT's audio was super clear. And then the other guy who's, we found out during the broadcast that is originally from South Africa, which was like, oh, that's that accent. But his audio was like really faint. And I just, it takes away from it a little bit. I mean, I'm no audio pro, but try to make this podcast sound good. But when you have those like things that stand out, it sometimes is hard to ignore. And yeah,
well, and it's also, I think too, from a gambling aspect too, it's very strange not to have as much of the conversation be about the sport.
Yeah,
because people are, and you have live betting that can happen through Bet365. So it's like, if you were to watch another sport and not get the type of information you actually want to bet on the game is very frustrating. And I know we come from a very inside mini golf aspect of it, obviously, and we know the players and we know the courses and we know all of this.
Yeah.
And I don't, we both been on Holy Moly, right? So we don't mind that type of humor in some extent, but that's why it just, for me, it felt very weird and that it didn't match what they've been really trying to go for from promoting it as a sport that you can wager on.
Yeah. I mean, as a last like little bit of constructive criticism from event number two, there was a hole where Greg Newport went out of bounds. It was 13. And the score reflected that. But because the camera person had not followed the ball the right way, you could only really see Greg's response and where the ball had kind of bounced off that brick that you're playing it off of. It looked like he hit it a little too short, where you can then put it over that side of the cup. You know, there's like a mound instead of a wall behind the cup, and he went out of bounds, but no one really knew what was going on with that because they didn't capture it on video. And I think for the purposes of making the gambling seem really legit, that stuff you really got to capture. That if you're missing that kind of a major moment where there was a cave shot too, I think in that event or another event where Greg hit it and it just kind of held on him. And then all of a sudden the ball's over, this stopped near the cup. And that's the kind of stuff that I think in sports, as mini golf's new to broadcast, you just have to show if you want to keep people engaged. And weird stuff that Holy Moly made weird decisions on because they edited the crap out of the show because they needed to do it for time. And we knew that the results were legit, but I think it makes people call into question the legitimacy of it. And I would hate to see that happen. So that would be the only last thing on the WPL. And we're going to be following along and hopefully have some events coming up in the coming months as the weather's nicer, and look forward to some announcements of that soon, hopefully. And finally, on to our big interview. We spent a lot of time getting up to it, and we're recording this actually separate from the interview. It's very difficult to get Pasi Aho, who's our guest, on a podcast just because he does so much in the world of mini golf and traveling, that we recorded this way back in February on the 2nd. And there were a few things in the podcast that did get mentioned. I think the tournament in Minnesota that we were hosting, that was mentioned, as well as a few other things. So keep that in mind with the interview. But by and large, we tried to do the interview as an evergreen and a conversation that we think, for people who don't understand some of the history of the World Adventure Golf Tour and mini golf balls, this will hopefully be very exciting to you. And even if you know a lot about it, you're going to have some fun. We had a blast doing this interview, so enjoy. Once again, we are thrilled to have another guest from overseas. And instead of me trying to say his name and tell you about all of the things that he's done in the mini golf world, I'm going to let our guest introduce himself. So, guest, introduce yourself to the podcast.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Pat. My name is Pasi Aho. Almost 50 years old, a mini golf enthusiast, player, official, and much more since 35 years, roughly. Daytime, I run my mini golf company, Fun Spots. We are building courses and selling equipment. And as a pretty time-consuming hobby, I'm the vice president sport of WMF, World Mini Golf Sport Federation. And when I have some time left, I try also to play mini golf pretty actively at the moment. That's it.
That's a few mini golf things, to say the least. And you're someone who has a pretty in-depth and wide history in the game. And we'd really encourage people, if they haven't already checked out your interview on the 54 Problems podcast, to go check that out for additional context and all of the things that Pasi is doing to help grow the game and track the game around the world. But we really came on here to talk with Pasi kind of in a very specific way. And a lot of it was prompted by the fact that it seems very likely this year will be the first time ever that I will be playing in the World Adventure Golf Masters. And it is something that I'm very unfamiliar with. And in addition to that, with the World Adventure Golf Masters, what you also bring into play and what we've talked about, that when we play on the Mini Golf Open standard, not system, courses, that over in Europe, when they play MOS, in many cases, they are also playing with the mini golf balls that are very specific. And again, with Posse's history and deep connections with mini golf balls, we wanted to bring him on here to talk about them. And I think we're going to just kick it off talking about mini golf balls, because I'm coming from this from the perspective of most, I think, people in the States and a lot of places around the world that are just completely unfamiliar with the idea that you would play mini golf with anything other than one ball. So I'm not trying to like look to get you to give us like a like every perfect detail, but give us a little bit of the history as you know it of mini golf balls in the sport.
Well, I don't really have facts, but I read a lot and I've heard a lot, and I believe that the beginning, obviously you need some kind of ball whenever you play mini golf, and that's already started like 100 years ago almost in Sweden and so on. But I believe the first balls really developed for mini golf came out at some point in the 70s. Obviously they were not necessarily produced for mini golf back then, but people started looking for different kind of balls which were around enough to be played and had a different properties, bounce, hardness, and so on, that they could get some help in improving their scores. And then, well, I started playing 88, and back then you had already a couple of companies who produced mini golf balls specifically. The quality was not as steady, as stable as it's today. We used to order balls to Finland from a German seller, and the quality was sometimes very variable compared to today's quality and demands. But yeah, and from that point on, they have evolved steadily. Of course, the different possible combinations at some point come to an end, and you don't really invent any really totally new balls anymore, but you just try to make the existing types a little bit better.
And correct me if I'm wrong, because again, coming from a very novice point of view on this, with mini golf balls, the different types of qualities that they can have are, is that there's the sort of small, medium, and large size. And then there are various levels of hardness, bounce, and weight. Am I missing?
Correct.
And then within that even, there are obviously a number of different kinds of substances the balls are made of. And we'll talk about that a little bit later. But is that sort of generally the way that you could describe mini golf balls?
Yes, I would take the fifth factor in, and that's the surface. Some of them are lacquered, some of them are unlacquered. Right. So there is they are basically all, or most of them, made of rubber, some kind of rubber mixture of God knows how many ingredients that are vulcanized, not as hard as an ice hockey puck, but basically vulcanized with the same principle, and then grinded to be round, and then lacquered and printed with a logo and so on.
That's right. Yes, because there's like the blank ones, there's the blank ones, there's ones that have a little bit of a lacquer, and then there's the rough ones that have like a little bit of a texture to them generally. But that's right. It's one of those things I forgot. And then of course there are also some really unique balls out there that are, when you tell people this, that you're just like, there's glass balls and there's balls that the clickers that are a miniature pool ball, and those are of different substances. And within that, so does it go any further than that? Like, I know all of this, there are then conforming rules for international play. Like, they can only bounce a certain amount of height, and they can only be a certain amount of deadness. And then within all of those, like, there's a high end and a low end, correct?
Yeah, that's right. The weight is somehow defined by the physics. Then you have the rules for the bounce, and the hardness is also, I mean, you can have the maximum 100 shore hardness and down to some 15, which is very, very soft hardness. Those are the limits. And then you have, when you have five different factors, which we listed, you have hundreds, thousands of different possible combinations. And even then, that's not the end of the story in that sense, that you can, by preparing, by heating up or cooling down a ball, you can even change its properties, make it usually faster and softer. Not always, but roughly it's like that.
And I think this will help not only for me, but for our audience, but why? I think people always ask that, why use all these different types of balls? And I think that is a thing that is very foreign to people who come from the golfing world. So why? I mean, I think we've talked about the different standard style courses, the miniature golf / Eternit and felt and concrete over in Europe, but like why with those or even with adventure golf style courses?
Quite simply, in my eyes, to improve the results, to play better, to achieve more aces. Or in some cases, it's not the ace that you want to achieve, but you want to achieve a two instead of three or so on. So it's like in almost every sport. I don't say in every sport, because maybe it's not quite like that, but in every or most of the sports, you are improving your equipment to improve your results. I think that's the core reason.
Yeah, and just for context, I think I use this story that was passed on to me from someone from Team USA that played in Austria, that at the World Adventure Golf Masters this year, that with a golf ball, the course record on that 18-hole course was 41, but using mini golf balls, it was 31. You could opt to play with golf balls, but if you know that people can get 10 strokes better with those mini golf balls, you're kind of putting yourself out of a competition. If you're 10 strokes potentially down every round, that's a big deal. Was it always a thing, and we'll get into this more with adventure golf, was it just always kind of baked into the standard styles of mini golf over in Europe that those balls were always used? Was there ever a point where people were playing on felt with like a golf ball?
I don't think, I don't know the history of this. As you mentioned in the last episode, this Massaban or what kind of ball they actually used. But ever since, there has been a felt, a Swedish felt and golf ball. They don't fit well together. It's that the ball is rolling way too fast on all the systems, and it's also too bouncy in many cases. So when I started playing felt, that was what my home course had in Finland. My first set was a set of three or four balls, and then slowly and surely it grew up. But felt is still a system where you can manage with a low number of balls. Then miniature golf, Eternit and concrete are clearly a different story. And as adventure golf or MOS turf courses, you can also manage with I would say very low amount of balls if you have knowledge how to use and adapt them. But still, on most courses, you will improve this course. Maybe not 10 shots, but at least one or two.
And so with a lot of people probably don't understand that as far as competitive mini golf goes, the typical courses that we would play that would fit in the mini golf open standard or adventure golf, as far as the international game goes, that's relatively new. And I assume when there were those first big adventure golf tournaments, it was a meet that the mini golf balls were being used, that there were no golf ball only events back then, that it was assumed that you would use mini golf balls as well, correct?
At least since the beginning of the WMF adventure golf tournaments, which is the first WAGM was 2011, there have been tournaments. My first adventure golf tournament was 2005, the World Crazies in Great Britain. where obviously you play one ball. Back then it was not a golf ball like it's today. It was a coarse ball with dimples, which was, I would say, closer to a mini golf ball than a golf ball. But at the same time, the British Open and other tournaments played in Great Britain, they were using mini golf balls. It's also for me logical because most of their courses, or at least very many of their courses, don't actually have an artificial turf. They have kind of felt, which mm-hmm. is a little bit slower than Swedish felt, but it's still not a turf. So the golf ball wouldn't be an optimal choice all the time.
Yeah, and I think that's another thing that a lot of players, especially in the States, would be unfamiliar with, because we have very few courses. The closest thing to felt that we have would probably be the putt-putt courses. That material is pretty close to felt, and I think it is. And there's really nothing in the States that I've seen that matches, like commonly that matches Eternit or concrete. Those are surfaces that just seem, when you first see them coming overseas, you're just like, whoa, how do I get a golf ball to stop? And believe me, I definitely tried all of the systems with a golf ball. And I can tell you that concrete was pretty amusing with the golf ball, especially a Callaway Super Soft. It was sort of like, when will the ball stop? And sometimes it took a while.
Yeah. I bet it did. It can be good on the on lane number 7 on the long golf.
Yes.
Apart from that, probably not.
There are hundreds of thousands of different variations with all of those 5 different properties. And as you said, there probably will be a point where all of the balls exist in the world. But I'm curious, I have 2 separate questions. One, I'm curious how many balls you own personally that you would actually use for play.
Too many.
That was the answer I expected.
I don't know exactly, but I would say it's about 1,300. I'm a bad seller. I'm better buyer than seller in case of my own stock.
And then I would be curious how many, and this is going to be a wild guess, if you were to look at all of the stores, about how many of those different types of balls are usually available? Are there really like a fairly narrow selection of balls that you can find available and in stock? Because that's a big thing about mini golf balls, is that it's kind of like all the records that are surrounding me in my room, is that there are so many balls that are just not available, and it becomes a collector's thing where people are buying and selling things that are either they're finding not useful for the way they play the game or the way they strike the ball, or that they maybe aren't playing as much, and so they start to pare down their collection. Like, how are there like tens of thousands of balls available to buy right now, or is it a much more limited scope?
I would say, first of all, I wanted to comment to my 1,300-1,400 balls. I still regularly, when I travel to a tournament, I grab maybe 100-150 of them. Most of the time, the same balls that I take with me, because they are my trusted ones, and the rest is for specific cases. And yeah, as we come to the collecting, I would say, including all the new balls plus secondhand balls, which are, the second market is pretty big in Europe on Facebook and internet, you have thousands of balls available. Some balls sell out very quickly and become perhaps expensive later on, perhaps not. I still don't. I think you should invest in old wines or something rather than mini golf balls to make money out of that. But yeah, there is a ball currently, it's carrying the name of the great Swedish player Fredrik Persson. Mm-hmm. It has sold for €400 in an auction lately. Woo! Which is for a ball that's not older than 5 years. It's clear that nobody needs exactly this ball for playing, so it's a good one, yes, but it's a collector's item.
Well, I mean, that That's got to feel great for if you're Frederick.
Well, and I guess that was going to lead to a couple questions or a couple things. That's not necessarily for the ball properties, but right, one of the things that's pretty unique about around the European balls is that it's very common for when somebody wins a big tournament, yes, a team wins, you know, that they get a branded ball, right? And you actually, like you mentioned, Frederick's, and right, I've got Gunnar's ball. I mean, even the Putting Penguin, we made our own. So the double question is, like, when people are designing those balls, do they look at, like, okay, this was a specific ball that I, like, type that I used, and so I want to replicate that? Is it sometimes just random? And then, Posse, do you have any, and how many do you have, if you have more than one named after you?
I think some people are looking to make exactly a ball they seem to need or play very often. And some people just go for something good that's already available and doesn't need to be produced from scratch. Some people just want the beautiful colors and a nice logo. That's not to be underestimated nowadays, that the optics are also a selling factor. And I have not won many titles or almost any titles, so I started my own collection. It's at the moment at number 31. Yeah. And I've said I'll keep on doing balls as long as they sell as well as they've done so far. So.
And are any of those available? Because I remember you talked about that on 54 Problems, but are most of those are relatively sought after and not available. Is that correct?
Yeah, I believe I have at the moment maybe only 5, 6, or 7 of them available. So the oldest ones are pretty hard to find already.
And I'm curious, because I know that you had said with both the concrete and miniature golf, the Eternit, that you can get a pretty wide variety of balls for specific situations. But with adventure golf, how wide can it go? Like, are there certain balls and certain properties that you find are never useful for adventure golf and MOS? Or can you kind of find a purpose depending on the hole with any type of ball? Like, if you had a ball that was super heavy and hard, or super, super light that was like a dead ball that you might use off the back wall in those long felt holes, like, do they have a good use in adventure golf and MOS as well?
I think it's dangerous to say never, because you never know when you're going to need that ball that's in the last corner of your storage. But in general, you can say that the unlacquered balls with the naked rubber surface, you don't want to play them too often on adventure golf, because the lacquer gives the smoothness and less friction. It's the turf is not same than hard concrete or felt, so the ball needs to be moving a little bit better. Obviously, the golf ball is moving the best. That's why you see quite a lot of clickers and glass balls used even on MOS, because it's moving nicely. So then sometimes you want to have a ball that is not moving fast, then you take a softer, maybe a little bit rougher surface to get it stopped to the drop pocket, or just you want to play exactly to the hole and not further. And it's a difficult question with the bounce, if you think of the typical city golf courses with the hills as boundaries. You don't play classical rebound shots, although they have a lot of bricks and plates where you are playing a rebound shot. But for this kind of courses, it's more about the rolling and not about the bounce. Some people like to play heavier balls. Some people prefer lighter balls, depending on the technique. But yeah, I think for adventure golf, MOS, kind of selection of 5, 6, 7, 8 balls of different properties will bring you pretty far already. If you have a variation in the bounce and a little bit in hardness, that will help quite a lot, regardless of the course.
In the big question that I have, that I've heard the answer, but I'd be curious to hear it from you, especially since you've been so engaged in the mini golf ball world for so long, is we've seen and a lot of people have talked about how golf ball only courses are gaining a lot of traction. And from your perspective, why do you think that's the case?
Well, I think it's easy to understand the arguments that it's a good point to start, like easy entry to the game, clear. Everybody's playing with the same ball, so you don't need to find the right ball, the best ball, or the best ball from your collection for the lane. Then again, like the tournaments where the organizer is giving you that ball, then it's really the same conditions. But for example, take putt-putt, everybody's using the kind of ball they prefer. So it's a golf ball, but it's not the same ball anymore, right? And I think the easiness is a factor that you cannot deny. But then we come back to the question in which sport on top level the athletes are playing with exactly same equipment. I don't think there is too many of them. Take darts or this kind of sports.
Yeah, and that makes sense. And that's sort of the argument we have to make sometimes on the stateside. And we've, you know, had to make this argument with some tournament organizers, is that we get a lot of small courses that feel that a tournament, in order for it to be fair, people should be using the same equipment that the public is using. So a house ball and a house putter. And I think the argument I've tried to make is, imagine if you're asking people in a game that I know well and prefer, basketball, to say everybody has to wear the old school Converse Chuck Taylors. You could do that, but there's a reason why the top athletes do not wear Chuck Taylors, in the same way why the top athletes will get a specific mini golf putter or get a top end golf putter, because that has a certain feel to them that works out right. But you go to any tournament, I bet you'd be surprised to see more than half of the field with a similar putter. And in many cases, you might not actually see more than a handful of people with the same type of putter. Maybe in Europe, where there's a few more standard mini golf club companies, but I bet even there, you're still getting a wide variety of people using different equipment.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing I always point back to Pazzi, is that at that highest level, like, I don't mind having a tournament here and there where everybody's using the same thing, because it is kind of fun, right, to standardize. But if you take any other sport, and, you know, one that's kind of similar, like bowling, right, everybody's all got their own type of bowling balls. Most of the times you got more than one. You got a strike ball, you got a spare ball, and that's not too dissimilar. My wife does archery, and all of the bows in a division all have these little tweaks and stuff. So I don't see it as like totally different on the golf course or the mini golf course to, you know, have that same level of customization. And I think your point is something that we probably don't drive home a lot. Like, when Tom and I are trying to educate people or people getting up to speed on the mini golf balls, it can seem overwhelming, right? Because if you watch like the world championships, they're using a lot more mini golf balls during their rounds than you would potentially on an adventure golf, right? Like, your point about,
yeah,
you can have a much narrower range of type of balls to do very well in adventure golf. And that was my experience when I played Waggaman 2019. You know, I obviously didn't do as good as everybody who won, but I did really well for me. And I think I only used 8 balls on the course, and a lot of them were, you know, you could reuse, because that's what adventure golf comes to. And so I think, like, where we sometimes get the argument of like, oh, you can do all of this. Well, on adventure golf, maybe not. So like, what's, is it really that hard to say, even if you used a dozen balls, like to go from one to a dozen is not as much as one to 54 if you had three different ones for every hole, depending on what the temperature was at the time.
Yeah, I mean, from Eddie's interview, the story of Uppsala's ball stock when they traveled to a tournament, that's absolutely true. But that's really the other end of the line, and at the other end is that one ball. So we're even, yeah, it's exaggerated science when they travel, but even then they don't use more than a couple of hundred of those balls probably. They just are there in case there is a ball that some other team is playing and it's really good, so they can have it out and try, but it's a pretty long way before you are that far. And yeah, especially as I said, on adventure golf, the big advantage nowadays is that the communication in the modern era is so easy. You have knowledge about every course before you travel there. 30 years ago, we wrote letters to friends in that country and hoped they would send us some kind of letter back with a list of balls they play. And then we started searching before we traveled to the European Championships. But nowadays you have lists on internet and people can help you in no time. So even if it's special balls, you can at least have the information. And this is also valid for the adventure courses where people are playing.
Well, that feels like the perfect segue for the other topic that we really wanted to talk about, was that you have a really deep history in bringing adventure golf to a larger competitive level with the WMF, because, correct me if I'm wrong, you had a big part in getting the World Adventure Golf Masters started back in the first year was, correct me if I'm wrong, 2011 at Hastings?
That's right. I don't remember all the details anymore, but yeah, it probably started at some point between my first visit to World Crazies. This was my first time on adventure golf and playing in Great Britain. And somewhere around 2009, it was the former BMGA president or chairman, Sean Homer, and Keith Gillard, back then also one of the actives and best players in Britain. We created the first set of MOS rules, also for the WMF rulebook. And I give Sean the honors. He likes to call himself the father of WAGM, and I'm sure it was his initial idea that we should do something official, international. British Open has been a story since end of 90s, I believe. So it's there was already a long history and tradition of people going to England for playing adventure golf. And then, yeah, three of the first WAGMs were played. No, four out of the first five were played in Hastings, and then came Kosovo and so on.
Yeah, and this year is going to be really interesting too, because it's not the first time that it's going to be in the Czech Republic, but correct me if I'm wrong, this is the first time for the World Adventure Golf Masters, which are also calling WAGM, will be played on two different courses. Is that correct?
That's very correct. Firstly, there are not so many locations who can offer you two different adventure golf courses, and people have been asking me a lot why, because it's obvious that it's it requires more training, or the efficiency is not as high as when you practice only one course. But it's a fact that we didn't have any other applications for the World Adventure Golf Masters 24. We had this one fantastic application from Brno. The location is really great. And the owners and the local club, they really wanted to have it on two courses. And I think most of the ideas should be tested once. If it's not working, we can go back. Maybe we will go back anyway because the next applicant has only one course. Who knows, maybe there will be another double course or combi course wagon in the future. We will see.
Yeah, that is, I think, a thing that has raised a lot of conversations with players, and especially from the states where playing with the mini golf balls on those styles of courses is already a little bit of a learning curve. And for me, my incentive to go was twofold. One, I know that I'm going to be new to mini golf balls and I don't get a lot of opportunity to play them in a real strategic way with people that know how to use them. So if I'm going to train, why not train on 36 holes? I'm going to learn a lot more on 36 holes than I'm going to learn on 18. Probably not going to win anything, but I'm going to learn a lot in that. And the other completely non-intuitive thing for competitive sports is the biggest reason I want to go to Brno is for the third course that I wish we were playing instead, Adam, that when I saw photos of it and videos of it, I absolutely fell in love. As someone who loves uniquely designed courses, and we'll find out how it plays, I'm going to be over there playing it too. I'll probably be one of few players that goes over there. Maybe I'll drag some people with me, but I really love that it's just a big mini golf complex that has lots of variety. And the nice thing talking about what you mentioned earlier about sharing of information, I can already watch a video from the club at Brno how to play all those 36 holes in addition to the other 18 on that Adam course, which Brno, if you still have some time, you could do it. Just like people are already kind of like about two courses, but you could change to Adam. Like, no one will be mad, including me. I know it won't happen, but you got to dream.
Yeah, that's right. And they have promised to bring more videos where you play the courses with mini golf balls. I believe the videos now are still golf ball videos. And it makes on some holes a difference, probably not on all. I've not had the chance to play the courses in tournament. I've played some test rounds there on both courses. They are very different, as you have seen, Eve and Venus. One is shorter, it's uphill, downhill, and you are expected to do a lot of aces. And the other one is probably the hardest test mini golf or wagon has seen, maybe aside of Kosovo 2016. Oh, but it boy. Will be grinding, no doubt. You don't have to necessarily win it over there, but you can definitely lose it there. It's a strategic place needed.
And I guess the other thing too, because we've talked about a lot about the World Adventure Golf Tour. Obviously, the AMA, we've got a stop on it. Our winner is trying to prep Dave Vedas, learning his way through mini golf balls. I've been giving him whatever little bit of knowledge I have, but he's going over because that final is being played on the Eve course over there. Correct. It was a month and a half, 2 months before Wagam. So there'll be some more intelligence brought through that tournament being played ahead of time. So, you know, nice to see, and should be very interesting to follow along. And you know, we're going to have Dave on the podcast probably a couple times before and after to get his standpoint from doing that tour. So we're all looking forward to the events in the Czech Republic this year.
So selfishly, then I have to ask, because this will help Dave too, if we're playing the Eva and Venus course and we can't pack 100 balls, are there like a handful of balls that you, from your experience, you would say this type of ball or some of these properties, to your opinion, would be the best? And again, I think we should preface this all with, it's fairly subjective in some ways because it depends on what type of ball you like to play and like how you strike it a little bit, I would say, correct? Like some people will play the same hole with a variety of different balls. Like you might not have people playing the same exact type of ball in every hole, right?
No, surely not, because you have your personal preferences, what kind of balls, if you want to play harder or softer or lighter or heavier balls. And it's especially the Venus course is a lot about the touch and the right speed, obviously also direction. But I think after the World Adventure Golf Tour final, there will be a pretty good picture what kind of balls are needed on Eve. My impression with those couple of rounds is that it's not very complicated and material related. You need a dead ball, a semi-bouncy ball, a bouncy ball, and then, yeah. But like I said, I have just taken balls from the locals and played them without asking many questions. So the tour final will definitely tell.
Yeah, I'll be paying close attention. It's one of those things where I am preparing in a way where I know I'm going to have to learn a lot, but I also want to do well. I have a collection of mini golf balls that I collected between trips to the UK and Sweden and just ordering from overseas and practicing with those and some indoor courses here. And then when the spring comes in the summer and just trying to get it down. But it's been really interesting because a course where we're holding an indoor tournament for the AMA in a couple weeks, there's a final hole that few people make the hole in one shot on it. And it's just a one shot kind of final hole in a course. And the squishier dead ball in a medium size, I have found the percentage of making with that ball so much higher. And even if the rest of the holes where I found some mini golf balls that play a little bit better, but weirdly a golf ball on the majority of the holes still to my own preference feels well. If I had the chance and choice of being able to play a mini golf ball on that course, that one hole would make a huge difference. I probably could hit, you know, one out of every three balls into that final hole for a hole in one versus with a golf ball, I bet it's one out of 10, one out of 20, just the way that the cup is positioned. And that's pretty big. If you can make that one out of three rounds in a tournament, that's a pretty big game changer, especially with our rules. So yeah, I have found very quickly the point of it. And I think part of the reason, honestly, to do this podcast is both of us get these questions or get these comments that this, like, why? Like, why use mini golf balls? Some people, because they're small, they're like, well, it's cheating. You know, they're smaller and it's easier to get it in. It's like, okay, here's a golf ball. Here's a clicker. You're 20 feet away. See how much easier you can get them both in sight unseen without practicing with them. I don't think the average person is going to step up and hit that any better with a clicker if they don't play with it regularly versus a golf ball. It's just all about practice with it and knowing the right situations, which I don't know them yet, but I'm looking forward to figuring those out in the Czech Republic and excited to see more videos of that. I'm hoping too, when they're using the mini golf balls, I've been very, very slowly picking up a little bit of Czech on Duolingo, but I definitely need a lot more to understand the videos as is. So I'm hoping that there will be some, either I'm going to have to learn a lot more or that there might even be a transcription just so you can kind of hear a little bit more about what they're saying, how the course plays. But honestly, even without being able to understand what he's saying, I get what he's putting that foot out. He's pointing. I have found that in tournaments where I don't speak the language as some of the other people. That's enough. I have a video of that at Uppsala where I was practicing and a guy just comes up and he saw me struggling to make the ball in the hole. And I got to put that video up in a review at some point. He just goes up to this bridge, points at it. And I'd been missing and missing and missing and have that video. And then I took my next shot and I made it. And I was like, oh, didn't exchange any other words. And it helped. So I'm really excited to see what comes out of it and to see how people do when they have to learn two courses.
Yeah. And as happened in Uppsala there, be sure that there will also be people at Wagam who will help you with any, either you have to ask or some cases of some people you don't even have to ask, they will offer you more than enough advice by their initiative. But yeah.
Especially if you're doing really bad and they want you to move on and they just see you doing it so bad. Just, okay, take my ball. Like, it cost me $20, but I'm not going to wait for you to play this hole and figure it out. Just take this, hit it. It's going to go in. Get out of the way.
No, no.
I'm kidding.
Even the very best
yes.
want there to be more people from different countries. And
absolutely.
It's very boring to play always against the same 10 people. So be sure that.
Amen.
Which I guess leads
all
me to
people will be very welcome.
to a Wagam, future Wagam question. Is there a course or a country that you would love to see Wagam played at sometime down the road?
Now I have to be politically correct.
I know, so I put you on the spot. Let's put the disclaimer that this your opinion will not be the opinion of the WMF. This is the posse personal opinion.
Does it start with a US and end with an A?
Uganda, no. Yeah, sure. Also, why not? Why not? Many people keep telling me that they want to go to New Zealand. We know that there is a very strong group of players. Mm-hmm. But if you ask me personally, the course that I visited and even tested is in Albania, Tirana, the capital.
Huh.
On top of a 1,000-meter mountain, there is a resort, hotel, restaurant, and a city golf course. There has been a tournament, I think 2019, but unfortunately, never anything came out of that. It's because there is no federation, no active federation in Albania. But that place and that course would be really nice for a Wagam. Just as my personal opinion. Go check Daiti Mini Golf.
I'm looking it up right now.
And I know you had said on 54 Problems that there are some other developing federations out there. Are there any that are developing? Because you had mentioned Poland in the 54 Problems podcast, but it sounds like they're playing a lot more concrete or miniature golf or even a version of felt. I mean, is it possible that Poland's one that could hold a Wagam, or is that more likely for World Championship down the road?
Oh, that's first, they would need an adventure or MOS course to play on. I mean, they have different kinds of MOS courses, but not adventure style.
Sure.
No, I just hope they will stabilize their young federation and become an active partner. They are doing a lot of good things. There is a good vibe going on at the moment. So, yeah.
Yeah. You got me excited about it, honestly, the podcast, and then following on Facebook what's going on there. Weirdly, even though they don't have much adventure golf, learning some play with mini golf balls, Poland's pretty high on my list of places to go next. I think it would be really cool from our perspective, especially from the AMA and growing our own competitive sport within our organization, to go to a place where they're in the same position. You go to Sweden and you just feel embarrassed that our hospitality our organization will never catch up to Sweden. They are so far ahead versus seeing even the UK. They're doing just such an incredible job and they're so well organized. But you go to other countries where it's a little bit newer. And for me, that's just really exciting to see. And there's just a different energy where people are getting going that I there's something about it. I think it coming from the music world and seeing little music communities popping up in the Midwest of the US, it's the same thing. There's some fresh energy that's exciting.
Yeah. When I listened to what Eddie said, and us coming from Finland and no matter if it's Sweden, Germany, Finland, Poland, we all have this strong culture of sports clubs. It's changing more to the individual that you can go and do whatever you want. You pay for it. But when I grew up, it was like if you do sports, you belong to a sports club, whether it's mini golf, ice hockey, or anything else. And that's the difference even in Great Britain, they have their clubs for the club competition, but the players are directly members in the BMGA, and that's still in that sense more individual than in Sweden or Germany. The player is a member in a club, and the club is a member in the federation. So the player is not directly communicating with the federation or. Yeah, so that's a difference. But I have a lot of great friends in Great Britain, and I have the highest respect for what they are doing there for a long time already.
And obviously, there's a ton more we could talk to you about, Pasi. I'm sure we will have you on again as we go through different topics and everything. But you know, this covered with the mini golf balls and the wagon, really what we wanted to prep here in the beginning of 2024.
Yeah, thank you for that and coming on. We appreciate it so much, and it's always challenging to schedule with international guests, but it's so rewarding.
I'm happy to come again if you want me, and I'm really looking forward to seeing you, Tom, in Brno. I think I will see Pat in Copenhagen, right?
Yeah, about 6 weeks. Yeah. I'll be there.
Right, it's already around the corner. So thank you for having me. I hope it was all right.
It was wonderful. Great. Thank you.
All right. So thanks again to Pasi for jumping on here. As Tom mentioned, we had some time travel fun with this because I think we did mention that Pasi and I were going to meet each other in Denmark, which we did meet each other. And we will reserve some of the results of a particular mini golf match that we had for when we share this episode. But good times there.
And we will be sharing a video that he sent us after we recorded this initially, where he shot yet another perfect round of 18 on an Etternit course. Of course, he gave us the video of the final hole. So not only does he have a deep history with the game, he has a deep current present presence in the game of mini golf. So kudos to you, Pasi. If I get anywhere near an 18 someday, I will be thrilled.
And speaking about being thrilled of things, we are thrilled, as always, to have sponsors of this podcast, and one of which being our favorite virtual reality mini golf game, and probably just our favorite virtual reality game in total. It's Walkabout. And as every time I feel like we record an episode, we talk about the next greatest course that they have just put out there. Ice Lair is their most recent one. I'll have to say, this one grew, like, I thought I loved the haunted house type ones that they had already in the original Gothic and the mansion, but I mean, it's hard to go wrong with Puffins and Ice and being the Penguin. This one just was right up our alley. The new mechanics are great, and I think that's one of the things, not only the space that they make for you to walk about, but what they've been able to continue to come up from a mechanic perspective and interactivity is amazing. Like we've talked about, we've already had our one event. We'll have a second event later on in the year, so plenty of time to pick it up. And I guess probably between now and then, there'll be, I don't know, four or five more courses at the rate that they're going in there. But at the end of the day, we always talk about it's still pretty cost effective in terms of video games and the amount of hours that you can sit and play there versus maybe something on another console. And they are just, I feel like they're everywhere now. Granted, I do follow them on every social media, but it just conferences and all these different things. And I guess the one thing that we haven't announced in the last episode, because I think this was announced after, is their most recent collaboration that they announced with Wallace and Gromit, which I don't have a huge history with. I'm obviously familiar and have seen some of the shows and stuff. And I don't know, Tom, if you have more of a connection with it, but I know worldwide that is a big thing for them.
I have a weird connection to Wallace and Gromit that years ago when Robin and I were at a conference in Doha, that someone from Aardman, the studio that does all the stuff for Wallace and Gromit, we met one of people that worked there and became friends with him. And he weirdly had a connection to several hip hop artists that I was friends with and had put out a record by in Minneapolis. So very, very, very small world. But I've watched a little bit of Wallace and Gromit over the years. It's super cute. It's stop motion claymation, very clever and fun, and I can't wait to see what that game looks like in Walkabout. I'm sure it'll be fun, and Ice Layer's been a blast, and I'm sure there'll be a bunch more stuff coming out soon. So, yeah, thanks, Walkabout, and thank you to One Shot Golf. We continue to play that game, and as you may have noticed in some of our tournaments, we've been giving away prizes for the people who have the most hole-in-ones. That is swag from One Shot Golf. Sean Brown had won the player pack, beating me in a playoff at the Coziest Mini Golf Open, and I think he had won it at the Miniest Mini Golf Open as well. But yeah, they sent us some hats, which I guess we should be calling toques since they are a
are they the winter Canadian hats? Company. Yes.
They're winter hats, and we have some summer hats and some stickers and t-shirts and hoodies that we'll be giving away throughout the season at some of our events. And we thank One Shot Golf for that. And we're hoping to have the folks from One Shot on a future podcast. So stay tuned for that. And if you have questions for them for a future podcast, send them to us on our social media, drop a note in our DMs, and we'll be happy to throw those into our conversation that happens in the future.
And the 1v1 has been fun because you and I were actually in the same league for a couple go-arounds, which I think you got me both times. And I think Sevi just
second time by a lot
beat me out on the last week's one. I don't think I'm in the league with anybody this week. It's interesting the way you get paired up, but it is definitely a fun little mobile game to, you know, hit up throughout the day. And it's nice, right? Because even the 1v1, I mean, you spend 2 minutes, maybe tops on it at the end of the day and you're through. So not a lot of commitment, but a whole lot of fun.
Yeah, it's a blast. So One Shot Golf, still playing it several years later. And another one of those things that came out during the pandemic that was a nice holdover at that time when we couldn't do a lot of in-person mini golf. And now it's just nice little mini golf thing you can kind of pick up on the go. So thank you, One Shot. And we'll close this all out with Big Thoughts Mini Golf. I would love to imagine a world where neighborhood playgrounds, where your average municipal and state park just has a simple but fun mini golf course. Sure, you can head out to a golf course and play on the putting green for free if you need to practice, but it'd be great to see deeper investment into public spaces for people to be able to practice adventure golf and mini golf. 9 holes, totally fine. We don't need all 18. And if this inclusive sport is going to grow, we need to see it in more non-commercial settings. We have a fully accessible course in Minnesota, down in the southern suburbs, that's called King Park. And when I visited Greenville, South Carolina, McPherson Park there, that's just down the road from group therapy, they have a free course as well that was built by Harris. These are great examples of mini golf in public spaces that can be played for free. Just show up with your putter. And there's another one nearby in Spartanburg, South Carolina, that my wife, Robin, built while she was an artist residency there. We'd love to see more of it. And that's the kind of world that we're going to need if we want to see the game and sport of mini golf grow.
With that, we're at the 19th hole. So until next time, putt when ready.